listening to the Games Galore podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
And welcome in, folks. Games Galore 39 podcast. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. We've got Harbo in the house as my producer, and we're just going to start off the top by going to our guest for the day. His name is Colin Thompson. He played for the Gators. He played for the Temple Owls. He is currently with the Chicago Bears, and he joins us from Gainesville, Florida, God's country. What's going on, Colin? How are you?
It is God's country. Brian, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. So glad to have you on. It was good to meet you this past weekend. I had to go to my nephew's birthday Saturday. But how was your weekend on 30A? Is this an area that you visit often?
Yeah, I try to get there as much as I can. My girlfriend and her family have a condo there. And I thought I'd seen it all. I've been all over Florida for my time being here and from my childhood. I thought I'd been to every beach. That's the nicest place I've ever been to by far when it comes to beach and just the quality of people. It's a really great place. So I love it. And like I said, I try to get there as much as I can. So it was a great weekend. Celebrated my girlfriend's birthday, and it was a good little break for me because we just finished up our veteran mandatory mini camp up in Chicago.
Yeah, good deal. I was kind of wondering about that because I've known my Falcons. I'm a little worried about the Julio situation, and I saw their mandatory mini camp was this week. So you had that last week, and how long are you going to be training in Gainesville until you're do y'all have another OTA, or is it just straight to training camp late July? Go ahead.
Yeah, so the Bears, ours is a little different because, A, we have a new head coach in Matt Nagy. So if you have a new head coach, your voluntary workouts start 2 weeks before everyone else, plus tack on another week because we play in the August 2nd Hall of Fame game against the Ravens. So that bumps everything up about 3 weeks. So we were 3 weeks ahead of a team without a new coach and a team that's not playing in the Hall of Fame game, and then teams with new coaches, we were just a week ahead of them. So we got out early. We're probably the first team out, and we finished up our mandatory mini camp, and we report relatively early compared to other teams on July 15th. So I'll be in Gainesville through the rest of this week, and then I'll be back up training at Temple University and just hanging out near home.
We're talking to Colin Thompson. Follow him on Twitter at Colin Thompson TU. He's also got a podcast, Not For Long Pod, that you can follow on Twitter at Not For Long Pod, and we'll let him talk about that here in a little bit. But first, let's talk about the Bears. They've got, I read where they kept four tight ends on the 53-man roster last year. I know you're one of six tight ends in camp, and fellow Gator, Trey Burton, which mm-hmm. I'm thinking he was, what, maybe two classes ahead of you? He was a little bit older than you.
Yep.
But you were with him.
I played 2 years with Trey.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. So just tell us about, so I guess, you know, it's six guys going for four jobs. And you were with them. You signed with a practice squad in November of last year, correct?
Yes, right when I was in for a trial when Zach Miller got hurt in that game against the Saints.
Yes, yeah.
So I was there, and then they bumped the practice squad guy up, and then I came in on the practice squad after the tryout.
Good deal. Well, we're certainly hoping you're going to make the roster there for the Bears. So let's go back to your Gator days. So 2012 was your true freshman season, correct?
Correct.
Yes, and you had the foot surgery that caused you to redshirt that year?
Yeah, so I was at home training after the Under Armour game, and I just went around a cone, and my foot went, okay, great, got surgery, no big deal, come in, compete for a job with Clay Burton, Devin Westbrook, and Jordan Reed. And then my foot was acting up in camp again and couldn't get right, and they said, all right, redshirted. It was just kind of dealt with that. It's always a pain. But worked out okay, and came the next offseason healthy, and you know, I was ready to play and compete for a job, which I did until my foot went again after in my redshirt freshman year. My other foot went, and you know, kind of battled through that, which led to me actually being medically disqualified at Florida my sophomore year.
Right. And so I was reading about that. So they medically disqualified you. Were they basically saying, you know, your foot's shot and we're never going to medically clear you? And is that when you went to see this Dr. Robert Anderson in Charlotte?
Yeah. So what essentially how it goes is, you know, it's a mix of the kind of the dark side of college football. Like this is kind of, you know, players get hurt and it is what it is. And it stinks, but you know, we were 4-8 and things were not right in the building and we need to get some players in. There was coach, our, you know, I love Will Muschamp, but at the time he was on the hot seat. You know, it was a mix of, I think, a little bit of everything plus medically. Sure. I had my problems too. So they said, hey, listen, you know, this is a nasty injury and you can't get right for it. And we don't think, you know, you can play again. So I went to see Robert Anderson, who's arguably the best foot and ankle doctor in the country. And he just said, hey, listen, take some time off, take about 4 to 6 months off, reboot your body, reboot your feet, work on the things to get better. And I was fortunate enough that Temple gave me a full scholarship. And they were the only one to really offer one at the time when I was banging on Penn State's door and UCF's door. And they let me in, and it really saved my career and changed my life.
And worked out absolutely great in terms of your timing.
Yeah.
And obviously you had grown up, you know, within an hour of there, and you get there and Matt Rhule has just got that program taken off. So what, 2014, that was your first year playing when they went 6-6, and then you were there in 15 and 16 when they go back to back 10-4s. And I remember I had picked y'all that summer to beat Penn State in the season opener, and that was the longest active head-to-head losing streak at the time, because Navy had finally broken through against Notre Dame a few years before that, and now it's Kentucky and Florida that's that longest streak, and y'all beat Penn State, and really, y'all were in control of that Notre Dame game. I remember I was at Local Catch in Blue Mountain watching that one, and you guys were in control of the Notre Dame game. I had y'all as a 10.5-point underdog. Y'all still covered for me, but y'all are in control of that. If y'all win that game, y'all are really in the national title picture, or, you know, at least on the fringe of the conversation. Take us back to how special a year that was for you guys.
Yeah, that was so special. We had, if you look back at that roster, there's so many guys in the NFL. When I transferred to Temple, you know, I was like, yeah, listen, I've seen it all in Florida. I played an unearned game. I saw that. I came here and really saw it, you know. Like Dante Fowler, Jonathan Board, Ronald Powell, Dominic Easley, Shreve, like every day, those guys, you know, constantly getting reps against them. Antonio Morrison, John Bostic, Johnny Jenkins, I'm constantly, Renton McRae, always just studs. And I'm thinking there's no way I'm gonna get a Temple. It's gonna be not a breath of fresh air, but it's gonna be a little bit more manageable. And it wasn't at all. Our team was loaded. I was shocked. I'm like, this team only won 2 games last year. Everyone's like, yeah, what do you mean? I'm like, guys, this team's loaded. So fast forward through 6-6 season, we beat ranked ECU. You know, we beat them. We should have won them probably 10 games, but, you know, so many games are decided within 3 or 4 points. If we didn't turn the ball over or a penalty, that season's different. Then the first 10-4 season, you know, we beat Penn State, which was crazy. 10 sacks on Hackenberg. It was at home. The place was raucous. We have a close win against UMass. That's just, I'm not going to dive into detail, but if someone wants to know about a close win, that's about as close as it gets. Block field goal, run it down the other end for 2 points. Biggest hole will win. You know, then we're 7-0. College game day, we're both undefeated, coming into home against Notre Dame. And man, oh man, we had it. We really did have it. We should have won the game.
Y'all were winning like the entire game. I remember they rallied in the fourth quarter, correct?
Correct. Yep. Will Fuller is actually a North Catholic. Excuse me, not a North Catholic. He's a Roman Catholic. You know, in high school, which is a basketball, up and coming football power in the Philadelphia area. And man, oh man, he caught a seam down there. He caught a go ball on the right hand side. We were in cover two. Safety's a little slow getting over, but, you know, probably good job by the quarterback, hold him with his eyes, and boom, they scored. They beat us by whatever, I think it was 3. But, yeah, so if we're undefeated then, we'd be, you know, the last couple of years there's been American Conference teams that should have been, I think they should have been in the top four. We probably have the best resume for it, beating Penn State. Hopefully, if Penn State won more games, it'd be a lot better resume, but they had a bad year that year. But beating Penn State, beating undefeated Notre Dame,
and then being like a Houston and then a UCF in our division and a Navy, you know, that would probably bolster us into at least the top six. So, and then from there, you know, you need people to lose. So, yes, we were very much in the national title contention. And the American Conference overall has fared well against, you know, these big teams that we really have. Houston obviously went and beat the crap out of Florida State a couple of years ago in Atlanta. Yeah. So
it's a very underrated conference. I mean, UCF and USF were outstanding last year. You know, I hated that USF didn't have a better schedule last year. If they would have had, you know, maybe a heavy hitter or two, kind of like y'all did that year, because, you know, y'all had the opportunity to get big quality resume building wins over Penn State and Notre Dame. Had USF had that last year, who knows how their season would have gone.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I completely agree. You're talking about UCF, right?
Yeah, the same could be said for UCF as well. And remember, they had a game with Georgia Tech that got rained out, and so that kind of took UCF's chance for a resume-building win. But USF's schedule last year was just dog shit. I mean, they played nobody. Illinois was the only Power 5 team they played, and they played them at home, and Illinois was horrible. So they didn't give themselves a chance to even get in the fringe of the playoff convo, and they ended up losing to UCF anyway. I think it's a good conference. Even with Cincinnati being down, and you know, they're usually a pretty good program, but the way Memphis is playing, I really like Norvell, and Fuente there before him was doing a heck of a job. So looking at Temple this year, and I don't know how much you've studied them. You know, I just got my Phil Steele mag the other day. They go 7-6. Last year, they bring back 6 starters on offense and 6 on defense. Looking at the schedule, they've got 2 Power 5 games on the road at Maryland, at Boston College. I don't know how much you've studied them or looking at their schedule, but what do you think? And obviously, Jeff Collins, another Gator connection, was defensive coordinator for McElwain at Florida, and now he's there. What are your thoughts on the Owls this coming year?
Yeah, I think last year they struggled to find their identity early in the year. I think if, you know, the way they finished, if they go into Notre Dame, the game with the way they finish, that's a little bit of a tighter game. Maybe they still lose, but it's a better, more quality game. That was a tough loss on national TV. But, you know, Coach Collins' first game, I think they really found their identity towards the end of the year. I was actually fortunate enough, kind of unfortunate enough, to have, you know, less fortunate too. When my appendix went with the Giants in the preseason game number one, I got cut. Didn't have a job. So I did sideline analysis for Temple football games on 97.5, the Fanatic, the ESPN FM station there in Philly. So I got to really scout the team and get to know the team and break down the team. I did 3 games. So I'll say this, Coach Collins has done a fantastic job filling some really big shoes in Matt Rhule. Matt won 1 game at Baylor and he got interviewed for the Colts job. That's how special Matt is. And he means a ton to me, saved my career. But back to Temple. I think they'll have a great year. I really do. They have just an unbelievable strength and conditioning staff. They have great medical team. They have unbelievable coaches. They've done a great job. The athletic director, Pat Kraft, has done a fantastic job there. They're trying to get a stadium in North Philly, which would be great for the community and great for the area and great for the athletes and all athletes at Temple and students at Temple. Because we play down at the Link, where the Philadelphia Eagles play. So it's a little bit of a trek for our students to get there. So
how far a drive for your students to get there?
You know, at midnight, it would take 15 minutes. But during the day, it would probably take about 30 minutes, 40 minutes. So it's on the complete other side of the city. It's in South Philly.
Gotcha.
And we're in North Philly. So Temple's on the rise. I really unbiased, because I'm a Gator fan. I'm an Owl. You know, I really love a ton of teams, but I think Coach Collins did a great job there. He's big on social media, which I think is setting the trend. Some people may not like that, think it's kind of different, but the guy, he's recruiting LeBron to Philly. How many college coaches are making a recruiting pamphlet for LeBron James to come to their city? So I like his approach. I like Temple football's approach. They're hard. They're gritty. It takes a certain person, a certain player to play in North Philly. It was definitely a change for me coming from palm trees down here to gunshots essentially in North Philly. I heard them, once a week. So it's a different environment. And I'll never forget this. I sat next to Kevin Nagandi at the Maxwell Football Club in Atlantic City, their awards this past year. And he said to me, he said, when I talked to one of the, I think it was like the class of whatever, 2008, I said to him, you know, he's like, I said, every person, and you know, when they leave to go to the real world, they, you know, they say, welcome to the real world, to college graduates. But Temple, you see the real world every day. So it's just welcome to, you know, your next job. It's right. A different place. So
and a little colder, a little bit of colder weather too.
Yeah. Colder weather. Septa train comes right over the field. There's like 8 or 9 projects buildings around, or low income housing around the field. So it's a different environment. It's not a bubble school. You know, it's not a UF or a UCF campus. It's a different place, but it's a special place. And because of that, I think so. They're going to have a great year. They'll be tough. Those Maryland game, that BC game, they'll be a bloodbath. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to keeping tabs on them throughout my season.
Well, Jeff Collins is not the only one recruiting LeBron. I saw that Carson Wentz
is
trying to get into the mix today as well. So everybody is after LeBron right now. We're visiting with Colin Thompson, former Florida Gator tight end and Temple University tight end. He's with the Bears right now, number 82. He'll be one of 6 tight ends in camp for Chicago this year. And you can follow him on Twitter at Colin Thompson TU. And you can also listen to his podcast. And he has a Twitter address for that as well, at Not For Long Pod. Tell us a little bit about your pod, Colin.
Yeah, so I've always been into the media side of things, coaching as well. And I was like, you know what, I need something to do in the offseason other than just train. It's kind of something for me to keep me in the business. And I always wanted to start one. And so essentially it covers multiple topics. I did a men's and women's lacrosse preview for the NCAA championships. I did a Masters preview. We did a little, you know, betting game or a little gambling game of some sort or whatever to win some podcast gear. So I try to make it fun. I try to keep it light. I have so many friends and, you know, family in the business of just professional and college athletics. I'm so fortunate. So I figured, hey, why not use this platform to have them tell their stories? So coming up, I'll do some player bios. I'm going to have some of my teammates on with the Bears. Couple teammates from Temple. I'm going to just I just bounce around with it. There's no real direction. There's no real, hey, it happens every Tuesday at 9. It's kind of, I'll put 3 out in a week or I won't put 1 out for a month. It's kind of hard with the football schedule to do it. So
sure.
It's fun. It's interactive. I have people tweeting what they want me to talk about. Appreciate the shout out. It's definitely worth a while, or, you know, worth your time. If you're doing a long trip, it's something different. I can guarantee you that.
So how long are you going to be in Gainesville training, and give us a sense for the vibe going in to this year? I mean, look, the Gators, it's been other than 2012 when you were hurt and Driscoll had a 12-5 TDINT ratio and ran the ball well, we didn't really have a vertical passing game, but at least we weren't throwing interceptions and turning it over, and you know, went 11-1, mm-hmm. lost to Louisville in the championship game. But other than that, I mean, the offense
should have been the national title.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if Matt Barkley doesn't get injured against UCLA,
mm-hmm.
USC beats Notre Dame, and they should have beaten them even without him. They were down in the red zone a couple times and got nothing. And yes, we should have been playing Alabama rather than Notre Dame. And it would have been even better if Georgia had spiked the ball in the 2012 SEC title game, and it would have been Florida Georgia. That would have been even better. But that's neither here nor there. But I guess where I was going is our offense has been bad for 8 years. I just don't. Yeah. I don't think Franks has got great size, great arm. I just don't think that he's got the instincts, the awareness, and the decision-making. I'm hoping it's going to be Emory Jones or Kyle Trask. I think if Florida can get above-average quarterback play, I think they can be really good. But we have not had that pretty much for 8 years straight. What are you thinking on the Gators and just, you know, being around the team and the facilities? What does the morale seem up? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, the morale's definitely up. And I'll say this, too, you know, without the whole Frank situation, I was here for a couple games last year when I had a bye week or when I was injured. He fits the bill for sure. And I got to watch a little bit of the Gator spring game, but I'll tell you this, you know, you don't know with a new staff, people can change, their mindset changes. It's a wake up call, or it's, hey, this is my opportunity, or you don't know. So it's a great opportunity for the guys that have been here and for the guys coming in to prove themselves that, hey, I belong. I'm part of Coach Mullen's recruiting classes in the future. And we did the same thing. When we were in Florida. When I just got to Florida, you know, Will brought in some unbelievable players that we all know about defensively and offensively. We just couldn't get it together for some reason that I'll never be able to figure it out because everyone's in the NFL. But, you know, kind of long story short, what the team this year is, they're going to be hungry. Dan Mullen's going to make them play, you know, get them playing. They're going to be running around. They're going to be just ready to go and kind of prove and get the stink off their back that, hey, that, you know, we're a new team. We're playing with under a new coach, a new set of, you know, rules in the facility, a different demeanor. And, you know, I've been through a couple of coaching changes, and that's kind of how it is you're going to come out hungry. And like you said, and kind of, you know, if Florida gets any average or above average quarterback play, they're at skilled players and defensive players to, you know, change the game, create turnovers and create big plays in the game. So it's going to be a good year. I don't know much about the team, but I know this, that, you know, Coach Mullen is an elite coach. And from what I hear around the college ranks, that's an obvious statement. But from what I hear inside college football, he's an elite coach, and he's going to do everything in his power from his experience to bring, you know, the glory back to Florida football.
Before we get you out of here, Colin, I want to hear your thoughts on Trubisky. And obviously he's on your team, so you got to say good things about him. But how do you think he's coming along, and how does he rank in terms of quarterbacks that have thrown you the ball in terms of his arm? You think he's the real deal?
I do. This is completely honest, whether it's on my team or not. I think he's a great guy. He's everything you need and more. And, you know, as we know in the world of today, being a great person is not an underrated thing. You know, people take class and his way he carries himself, you know, people, there's a high precedence for it. And he's the type of guy that's a leader that can really take and turn a franchise, you know, of, I guess, average in the past to elite, not in the deep past, but in the last 5 or 6 years, the Bears have been not as good as they've been when they, you know, had their Urlachers and the Butkus and those teams. But Mitch is everything and more. He can throw, he can run. I mean, we watch a ton of Alex Smith film because that's where Coach Nagy came from with Kansas City. Uh-huh. So, man, oh, man, he can make all the throws that Alex can, and Alex is so good, such an underrated quarterback. So Mitch will have a big year. We got Kevin White coming back healthy. Allen Robinson's coming in. Trey Burton comes in. Deion Sims. We have great tight end group, probably the deepest in the NFL. We got great offensive line. Obviously, a Pro Bowl running back in Howard and Cohen.
I love Cohen. So I'm a Falcons. Yeah. I'm a Falcons fan, and we played the Bears in the opener last year, and we're real fortunate to win. And Cohen, boy, did he impress me in that game. And I believe he was a rookie out of, I want to say, North Carolina A&T. Hold on, I've got it right here.
That was his first game.
Yeah, North Carolina A&T. Thank you. he was balling that game, and very, very much impressed me. I also see y'all have Anthony Miller. That's the wide receiver from Memphis, and he's a stud as well. So, yeah, some new personnel. Maybe the Bears can surprise in that division.
It's brutal.
I think I know it is a brutal division, but Allen Robinson's a good get from the Jags, and Taylor Gabriel, you know, I'm saying, I'm a Falcons fan.
Yeah, I forgot about TJ.
Yeah, he had a huge season 2 years ago when we went to the Super Bowl. Didn't have as much production last year. Well, Colin, man, we appreciate your time, man. Best of luck making the roster, and holler at me next time you're up on 30A, and we'll get a beer, and make sure to follow Colin at Colin Thompson TU on Twitter, and follow his podcast as well. The handle for his podcast is at Not For Long Pod. Really appreciate your time, Colin. Enjoyed it, man, and best of luck to you this season.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. Go Gators, go Owls, and go Bears.
I hear you, brother. Take care, man. I'll talk to you soon. All right, Games Galore 39. We'll be back in just a few. And welcome back, Games Galore 39. Thanks to Colin for joining us. Talked a little Temple, a little Gator football, a little Bears. First active NFL player we've had on Games Galore.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear. Yeah.
So I met him at AJ's the other night, and then saw him again at McTie's. And so listen to this. So
Ryan picks up all our guests at bars.
right. And so, and I forget if I bought him a beer at AJ's. I have no idea if I did or not, but we had talked for a while, and then I saw him there, and he told Tracy, you know Tracy the bartender, right?
Yep.
I can't wait to tell Tracy that we talked about this on my pod. Okay, so
she's got
to
listen now.
He tells Tracy that Brian and I was I was Budweiser'd out. I was having a vodka drink.
Budweiser'd out.
Yeah, I was having a vodka drink.
Right.
And but I don't, you know, that's, you know, well, sometimes, whatever.
Brian basically drinks Budweiser's on ice, essentially. Right, right. There's not ice in them, but they're almost there.
Right. And so I was drinking a vodka drink, and Colin told Tracy, he was closing his tab. He said, and put Brian's next, whatever he's having, on my tab. And he closes out his tab. He didn't even tell me.
Right.
Tracy comes up to me and said, that guy got your next vodka drink. I was like, oh man, awesome, cool,
nice.
Well, couple guys I know,
six drinks later,
come up like, we're gonna do a fireball shot, you want to do one, Brian? I'm like, it's kind of late, guys.
Sure.
And they're younger dudes, and they're like, come on, Brian, come on. I was like, I'll do a bite. Okay. And for you folks that don't live in this area, because every time I go out of town, people are like, what? So our bars here at the beach on 30A, you can get what we call a bite. It's a half a shot at half the price and half as much. And, you know, it doesn't crush you.
It's never really half as much, though, I feel like.
It's never half as much. It's always, if you know the bartender, just two-thirds or three-fourths of a shot, but it's half price. So it kind of works for us.
Right.
So I told him I'd have a bite, and I did have a bite. But after I had that bite, and finished that vodka drink, I didn't want another drink. I was ready to cash out and go home.
Yeah.
So I said to Tracy, I was like, well, I'll get that vodka, you know, later this weekend. She goes, no, you won't. I go, what do you mean? She's like, no, you won't. It's for now or never. You know how she is. Now or never.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's bullshit. What are you talking about? He paid for the drink. He paid for it for me. What are you talking about? And so we get into an argument, and I love arguing with her. So I run into Donuts, who also bartends there.
Right.
And I asked him about it. He said she's right. He said she's right.
She's got to close her tab. She's got to get...
Right. He says she's right. And I go...
This isn't an investment bank, right?
I go, well, Donuts, if it happened with me and you, how would it have gone down? And he goes, well, it didn't go down with me and you, but if it went down with me and you, I would definitely have your next Budweiser would be on me. I don't know if it would be a vodka drink, but your next Bud... Yeah, right. we would figure something out.
Right.
I was like, okay, all right, that's fair.
Right.
But I haven't seen Tracy yet.
Well, she can hear about it on that.
Yeah, so we'll see. All right, the UFC fight card the other night was outstanding. Very controversial weigh-ins on Friday. They gave Yoel Romero 2 extra hours per the Illinois Athletic Commission's rules. They gave him 2 extra hours to lose the 1 pound. He weighed in at 186.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you got to be... 185.0 for middleweight title fights. Now, if you in the past have seen people 186, for non-title fights, you're given a 1 pound allowance. So you only have to be 186.0 for non-title fights. So he was a pound over because he was fighting for the title, and he had 2 hours to lose a pound. Well, his team, you know, because they had been, you know, they were going up against the deadline to get weighed in the first time.
Right.
And so they were, you know, hastily cutting that last bit of weight. So his team, with 2 hours, said, all right, let's take 30 or 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You just relax. Mm-hmm. Okay. You just chill. Well, you know, whatever they put them in where they...
Sweatsuit.
Yeah, all that. They didn't do that yet.
I mean, pardon my French, but you got to... If you need to lose a pound in an hour, you better sweat, shit, and piss. I mean, that's pretty much the only way it's going to happen.
Yeah. And so he didn't start cutting the weight again until whatever, 30 or 45 minutes later.
Right.
Well, the head of, and a doctor is overseeing all this. There's a doctor at the scene, right there with him, observing, you know, making sure everything's going okay. And the head of the Illinois Athletic Commission comes in after 1 hour. So, you know, he'd only been cutting weight for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And they say, okay, go weigh in. You can't, you don't have any more time. And his team is like, what the fuck? You know, what are you talking about?
Right.
And it's like, I'm the head of the commission. You got to weigh in now. Like, I guess he thought it was unsafe. He didn't want, like, you know, it is unsafe. All these weight cuts are so unsafe.
But, yeah, I mean, outside of, like, draining blood and just sweat, you know, I don't know what.
I mean, the doctor's right there observing it.
Right.
So I think it's bullshit. But whatever the case, and clearly, I mean, they went and weighed him right then, and he was only 0.2 over.
Right.
So, I mean, if they would have just given him, like, 10 to 15 more minutes,
right,
he probably would have been fine.
Right.
And now, and so what makes it so controversial is the scoring of the fight. I had it as a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And here, let me go to my article. Okay, according to MMADecisions.com, 15 media members scored the fight for Romero. Five of those had him winning 48-46, meaning they gave him a 10-8 round, which is either the third or the fifth. He almost finished Whitaker in the third and the fifth.
Right.
Okay. If you factor those five of those 15 that had Romero that had a 10-8 with the seven draws. So you had 12 out of the 27 media members that gave Romero a 10-8, whether it was in the third or the fifth.
Right.
Only five of the 27 press members that scored the fight had it in favor of Whitaker. Whitaker won a split decision, but only five of 27 media members had him winning.
I mean, he got beat up for sure.
Yeah, I had it as a draw. I had Whitaker winning the first, second, and the fourth. I had Romero winning the third and the fifth, but winning the fifth by 10-8.
Right.
The fight easily could have been stopped in the fifth. Easily. But wasn't. And that was actually was a good not stoppage because Whitaker, I mean, Whitaker was turtling there for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, and God, like we talked about last week with those perhaps, maybe Russian steroids with Romero.
Eastern Bloc steroids.
Right. Yeah. So after the fight, did you see the post fight interview?
Well, I read one. He was like, it was just like I was kicking a steel wall or whatever. Yeah. You know, I don't remember.
He goes, Rogan says, how tough is Joel Romero? And Whitaker goes, he hits like a truck. With his Australian accent, though.
Right.
I wasn't going to try to imitate.
Yeah.
And he does, man. He is 41. And God, Romero. And now Whitaker said this week, or I think it was yesterday, he goes, no, I don't want a third fight. He's the boogeyman.
Yeah. Yeah,
he goes, I survived twice. I can't fight the boogeyman again.
I don't blame him, man.
So Colby Covington won the co-main event. Let me be clear. I do not. I mean, some of his stuff. Look, him calling Brazilians filthy animals is just the equivalent of a racial slur to me.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable. It's dog shit. It's poor form. He needs to lose that from his program. Loyal listeners know I don't get into politics. I don't talk publicly or privately about politics because you political people get way too fucking emotional. And I don't want,
everybody gets offended.
I don't want anybody hating me because of any political opinion. So I have no political opinions, but I will say Covington had promised all week that he's going to do what every, you know, normal American should, not the Philadelphia Eagles and whatever he called the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
He goes, I'm going to take my belt and I'm going to take it straight to Donald Trump and I'm going to put it on his desk in the Oval Office like a good American should, or, you know, something to that effect.
Right.
And after the fight, they asked Dana, you know, can you make that happen? And Dana's like, yeah, yeah, I can make that happen. And I saw today Covington tweeted, in fact, let me go there.
He's going to the Oval Office?
I think it sounds like it from his tweet earlier. It sounds like Dana got it set up. Let's see. Forgive me while I'm getting there.
You think Dana has Trump's just like personal line? Can just like, oh, give yeah. him a call?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They're probably buds. Hey, chill.
I think so. I think he does. Okay, here's Colby's Twitter account. I look, I like how he calls it the haters nerds. I do like that part.
That is pretty funny.
He just get rid of the filthy animals thing, dude.
Right.
Come on, man. You don't got to be like that.
You can be a high school bully. Just don't be a racist one.
Right. Here's his tweet from 3 hours ago. Screw the National Filth Ball League. They don't deserve to go to the White House. See you soon, Mr. President. And he obviously copied at Real Donald Trump. And then he did the hashtag Make America Great Again. How about Dennis Rodman the other day wearing a hat saying Make America Great Again while CNN was calling on him? And this is Dennis Rodman, nicknamed the Worm, who once wore a wedding gown and married himself, who once dated Madonna, who was once on Celebrity Rehab, who once
Carmen Electra too, right?
Oh yeah, yep, yeah.
And he went to North Korea a bunch of times.
Oh yeah,
and he laid the groundwork for Trump.
He was drunk as piss over in North Korea, and
he and Un were getting drunk, man.
And he is now who CNN brings on as the expert with North Korea and American relations.
What a
world we live in. Like 10 years ago, if you said, hey, North Korean dictator is going to meet with our president, Donald Trump, and guess who's going to be with Trump? Dennis Rodman.
Our unofficial ambassador to North Korea.
I mean, right? Crazy, crazy, crazy. So, so Covington... He's accused Dos Anjos of greasing.
I saw that.
Yeah, and so did Esparza accuse Gedalia of that. It's always a Brazilian getting accused of greasing. I remember Randy Couture thought Machida was greased
right.
Between the first and second round before he did the karate kick and knocked his tooth out and won. I remember...
I mean, wouldn't that be pretty easy to like discover like during the fight?
Yeah, because you remember they're feeling them. They pat them down and stuff.
So, like, I don't see why. I don't.
Maybe when they get to the corner or something,
there's
cameras
everywhere.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't.
I mean, like, to me, that seems ridiculous.
I don't know.
You know, like, does he hide a packet of grease in his hair or something? Like, right. How's that even happen? Right. You know?
Well, when Couture complained between the first and second round, like, I don't see how it could happen in the first round. Now, but. Going into the second or the third, when you got your corner men that are in there,
he's just got grease on his palm, and he's just
I mean they've got well, whatever they're massaging their shoulders,
right,
they've got ice,
right.
They've got water, they've got maybe then you could grease them, and maybe that's when Covington is saying that it was. I didn't even really click the article.
If you get a cut or something, can you put like a little something on it?
Oh, yeah, they put Vaseline on cuts.
Yeah, yeah, so you got that
grease. But that's like on your face.
Right, instead of his body.
Yeah.
I guess I just see it being hard. I don't know. And you're so pumped with adrenaline, I'm sure you can't really call somebody out like in the midst of it. Like,
yeah.
What are you going to do between rounds? Be like, that guy's got grease.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, and we'll get back to UFC 225, but I got to talk about last night. So, Greg Hardy, former Ole Miss player. If you're not familiar with him, Harbo, so he was an all-pro defensive end.
Okay.
Had a great career. I mean, he's still 29 right now. He's been out of the league for a couple years. I mean, he was already an all-pro. Had a great college career for Ole Miss. In fact, the only play that I can recall ever during Tebow's career on a 4th-and-1, everybody always knew exactly what was going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be shotgun formation to Tebow, and he was running either right or left. And I can't ever once remember it being stopped except by Ole Miss. And I believe it was Hardy along with, that great defensive tackle who had a brother that played Jerry, Parade Jerry, who I loved the pick by my Falcons in like the second round. But he fucking retired after like 3 years like a D-bag. But anyway, but Greg Hardy, that was the only time I remember Tebow being stopped on a 4th-and-short in his college career. Well, anyway, in 2014, he was accused of just a savage beating of his girlfriend. I mean, pictures of her were posted on the internet. It was just god awful.
Yeah.
I mean, beat the stew out of her, but he settled out of court with her. I obviously a financial settlement, so she quit cooperating with the prosecutors, so it never went to trial, so he was never arrested.
Right.
So, obviously, I don't know, was Al Davis, had he passed at that point? But I always say this, you know, if there's a sketchy character, you know, either the Raiders or the Cowgirls will sign him, and Jerry Jones did sign him,
right?
And he acted like a jackass with them. I remember he was like coming after one of the coaches on the sidelines. He was just a total moron,
right?
Made Jones look a fool. Well, anyway, he's a bad guy. He's
right.
A bad, bad dude, and you know, he's been blackballed from the NFL, even though he could be a Pro Bowler. So he started training an American Top team in South Florida. Has apparently turned himself around. The way Dana, when he was asked about it last week, was apparently he was heavily in drugs and alcohol, and he did get arrested for cocaine in 2015. But he said everybody I've talked to at the gym likes him, men and women. He's respectful. He's looking for a second chance, and he's like, and he wasn't convicted, so we're giving him a chance. So you've heard of this Dana White Tuesday Night Contender series?
I have.
Yeah, so he's on there last night, and I watched it. It's on Fight Pass. And he had a vicious 57-second knockout. I mean, he floored.
Nice.
It was another former NFL player, Austin Lane. He floored him with a huge right, and he floored him. He jumped back up, and then he just caught him perfect with a left, and it was night-night. And they signed him. So there is going to be a lot of controversy about this. It's going to be... it's, you know, Dana is going to have to deal with these questions because the UFC is getting into the Greg Hardy business. And with Rousey gone, with Connor out 2 years,
right.
I'm looking right now that there's a report that UFC 225 did not even do 150,000 pay-per-view buys. That is brutal.
Good thing they sold it when they could.
Oh, my God, the Fertittas. God, did they make out like bandits.
Are you kidding me, man?
Yeah. And
well, I'm just going to say this, not that I've ever engaged in it, but I hear it's pretty easy to stream some of these fights. So that might be why
right.
The pay-per-view numbers are down.
Yeah, I mean, I have heard that too. I certainly don't partake in anything of the sort.
Of course not.
I'd go to Shades. They pay for it. I pay for the Budweiser's.
We go to the local establishment that plays it.
That's it.
But if they drop the price, I bet they'd see an increase.
They're not dropping no prices.
Yeah.
Hey, they might up their prices for Connor's next show.
So do you think we're finally done seeing Punk?
Oh yeah, yeah. He said it's a wrap.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I you know that's the fight I did not see, and I thank God because I heard it was god awful.
Yeah,
but what was I going to say in regards to...
Back to our gangster fighter who's coming into the league?
Well, no, I was thinking of something different, but anyhow, I know what it was. Tomorrow is Connor's day in court.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think if everything goes right tomorrow...
They'll announce by Friday.
By the end of the week, we'll have the announcement that Khabib and... Khabib and Connor's going down. Now, what is that? What is the month that his religion recognizes that he can't fight?
Ramadan, probably?
Yeah. Oh, but you know what? He did fight on the November New York City card. I think they're going to make it the main event for, well, I don't know. November's 5 months away, man.
They might push it to like December when everybody's home and
oh, no,
fat
no, no,
and
no.
Happy and
I think
money.
I think you do it sooner.
You think so?
I mean,
I'd build it up if I were them.
Well, I mean,
everybody loves spending money at Christmas time.
Well, I mean, I just think they want to get that result in and get Connor back in again and get, you know.
I don't know, man. They could hype it so much. Well, how much do you think they'll pay Connor? Because he just got how much did he make from his boxing match?
He at least $100 million.
Yeah, so.
Well,
he's going to want that again.
No, that ain't happening.
I mean, it's not, but...
He's going to get the greatest percentage of a pay-per-view that any UFC fighter's ever gotten, and he'll probably get the most disclosed payment. But I can't see him getting more than a disclosed payment of more than $10 million. I think the record is 33.5 for Lesnar at 200, if I'm not mistaken. Now,
okay.
Look, with the pay-per-view points that they get, I mean, even Anderson Silva and GSP were making, I mean, we don't know, but we think they were making, you know, 10 to 20 million a fight at times.
Right.
And I'm sure Connor, with his points on these pay-per-views, I mean, I'm sure Connor probably made 20 million on the second Nate fight. Nate probably made 7 or 8 million.
Yeah.
I mean, Nate hadn't worked since then.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I just wait on Connor 3. So anyway, Al Iaquinta, raging Al Iaquinta. Okay, another thing that Dana announced after the show the other night is they're moving weigh-ins back to the afternoon, and a lot of fighters are really, really pissed about it. And I want to... it reminded me to hit on the Rousey Hall of Fame induction too.
I saw that.
She's such a bitch. Wonderboy wants Robbie Lawler at MSG in November. Robbie's still recovering from an ACL, dude. I don't think he's gonna be ready, Wonderboy. Okay, here is Iaquinta right here, and he is so on the money with this. I'm gonna read his quotes, folks, and man, it's good shit. I agree with him 100%. All right, this is Raging Al Iaquinta from Long Island, New York.
It's pretty good.
Khabib goes, he, Iaquinta, real Brooklyn gangster. He real Brooklyn gangster. You location, Connor. Location, I would be there. All right, Raging Al, quote, talking about Dana here. His sense of reality is gone. It's gone. It's shot. It's absolutely shot. It's scary. Now he's putting our health at risk. He's going to move the weigh-ins. So why did you move the weigh-ins in the first place? Because in his mind, he wants more exciting fights. How are you going to get more exciting fights? Give the fighters more time to recover, right? Which is also beneficial to us because it's healthy. It's healthy for us to replenish. He goes on a little bit, and then he goes, Lorenzo Fertitta kept him in check. Now that Lorenzo's gone, I think he's going to run this thing in the ground because now he's just saying whatever he wants to say. No one's keeping him under wraps. He's saying whatever he wants to say. You're just going to move the weigh-in? What fighter did you interview? He said we've got 550 fighters on the roster. We interviewed more than you. I don't think so. I haven't talked to a fighter that was interviewed or talked to about moving the weigh-ins back to the nighttime. I think it's about time. It's all about him. It's always about him. And it's not just about him. He wants to get right. And if it's not about him, he wants to get right in there. I agree with all that. I mean, I thought Dana was just so narcissistic. It was disgusting and deplorable right when I first started getting into the UFC. Once I started liking the sport, I did like to hear what he had to say about it. And I kind of started liking him. And now I'm kind of going back to where,
not so sure.
Not so sure if I like you anymore, Dana. But, okay, so the Rousey thing. So she gets inducted to the Hall of Fame. In my UFC 225 rewind, in my Octagon Nuggets at the bottom, I wrote this. Let me have a swig of Budweiser before I...
before you launch into this tirade.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her, you know, she was announced in, and most of the comments were negative on everything I saw.
Fuck her. Okay, here's what I wrote Sunday. It was announced Saturday that former women's bantamweight champ Ronda Rousey will be inducted in the UFC Hall of Fame later this year. She'll become the first female to be enshrined. Without question, there's no man or woman more deserving of such an honor. Rousey's amazing run as champ brought so many female fans to the sport. Why do I not have my glasses on? Duh. Sorry, guys. Got to get the glasses on. And we got to increase the font.
Zoom in.
So I can read this. Have I not had my glasses on the whole show?
Yeah, you've been rocking them without.
Oh, man. No wonder my eyes are hurting. Okay, where was I? Rousey's amazing run as champ brought so many female fans to the sport that female fans of the sport that might have never entertained watching an MMA event otherwise. With that said, Rousey still, in all caps, hasn't once taken questions or conducted the first interview with an MMA journalist since losing to Holly Holm at UFC 193. She recently said, quote, "Why should I talk? I believe hearing me speak is a privilege, and it's a privilege that's been abused, so why not revoke it from everyone?" End quote. Oh, now I get it. Ha! Seriously, dude? So as she's inducted in the UFC Hall of Fame later this year, I simply have one question. Will she belatedly offer the MMA media the same writers that helped propel her to stardom while things were going great and she was winning fights be granted the enormous honor of, quote, hearing her speak about her final two fights in the octagon, in parentheses, I doubt it, with an exclamation point. I got a tweet back from some woman. Let me go read that.
She's supportive or angry?
Oh, she loved it. She fucking loved it. All right, let's see. What did she say? She is at Nolra, N-O-L-R-A-M, and she says, "It's refreshing to see somebody actually critiquing Rousey. Far too many are afraid. Thank you, exclamation. Yes, she helped make women's MMA mainstream, but at the cost of being the worst poor sport. Here's hoping Cyborg and Carano get their due credits for also being pioneers." I'm all about Carano, man. Love me some Carano. You familiar with her?
A little bit. I was going to make an ugly comment about Cyborg, so I won't. On my tongue.
You notice how I just stayed positive and just commented on Gina Carano.
Nope. I got to edit myself. That was a little...
Don't go Rogan on us.
A pre-edit.
Don't go Rogan on us. All right, so...
I don't have to do work later when I go to edit this podcast.
The Romero-Whitaker fight, that's right there with Fight of the Year candidate with Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje. Have you seen Gaethje fight yet?
I believe so.
With Michael Johnson,
the Fight of the Year? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then the Eddie Alvarez was awesome, and then Poirier was amazing. Okay, what else? What else UFC did I want to get to? Oh, Holly Holm. Improved wrestling in the win over Megan Anderson. She'll need that against Amanda Nunes because it doesn't look like Nunes and Cyborg is going to materialize. And so I think Holm is ready. And that's the fight I want to see. I want to see Holm and Nunes. I don't know who we can. Cyborg says she's only got two more fights since she wants to go to boxing. Other winners the other night.
We had Bam Bam, he won.
Yes, Bam Bam did win. He went beyond the first round for the first time, and that cost me an under. That was a close fight. Arlovsky was not happy when he did not get the decision. Curtis, Razor Blades, dominating the ream. And hey, come on, Dan Mergliotta. You could have stopped that. That last elbow that just erupted in blood for Alistair, he didn't need
elbow.
That, man. That's on you, Mergliotta. Golly. You arguably could have stopped the last two elbows. That fight was over. And then I lose Ricardo Lamas as a plus 200 dog in a split decision. He had several guillotine attempts in the third round, but they were just too wet and sweaty. And, hey, Rashad, man, love you, bro. You got to hang him up. You've held on way too long, three fights too long at least. Anthony Smith puts him away with a thunderous knee and then a couple of punches on the ground in 53 seconds. And Rashad, buddy, time to hang him up. And Joseph Benavidez lost another split decision for the first time since 13. And maybe, I don't know if he's ever lost to anybody other than DJ, but Sergio Pettis, Showtime's little brother, excellent win for him, and credit to Charles DuBronx Oliveira. He takes the Guida fight on his on Guida's home turf, and he wins as a short road favorite on less than 2 weeks of notice. So props to him. It was a good card. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Phil Steele Magazine is here. So we're going to talk a little college football. Games galore, 39. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back, Games Galore 39, as I said earlier, Phil Steele Mag has arrived, so let's get into some SEC stuff. Oh, and by the way, I think you might remember I bitched about it last year, because 2 years ago he had this really nice new feature where he, on every team's schedule, he marked when the other team was coming off a bye. So you can look and see, you know, what teams have, you know, favorable situations, spot scheduling-wise, and I like that. He brought it back. Don't know why they didn't have it last year. So I'll let you know your favorite SEC teams, which we'll go through right now. Alabama.
What are they ranked?
good. Not very good question. Uno. They're ranked number one. Yeah, it's a wash for Alabama in terms of byes. Alabama and LSU both have byes for each other, and that's it. Okay, Auburn. When they face Tennessee at home, Tennessee will have 2 weeks to prepare, but that's not going to help the Vols. They will get smashed on the Plains. Mississippi State. It actually has to face two teams. Well, let me say, Mississippi State gets 2 weeks to prepare for an October 20th game at LSU. And let's see what LSU has got the week before that. Oh, wow. LSU has a gauntlet before that Mississippi State game. They have at Florida, Georgia at home, and then Mississippi State at home. So from a scheduling perspective, major advantage for Mississippi State going into LSU. Now, then their next week's game, however, A&M will have had 2 weeks to prepare for Joe Moorhead's Bulldogs. Of lesser note, but perhaps for against the spread purposes, it is notable that the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana have 2 weeks to prepare for Mississippi State in week three for a September 15th showdown, and Mississippi State will be coming off trying to get out of Manhattan, Kansas with a W the way Auburn got lucky as hell to do on a Thursday night 3 or 4 years back. The Aggies of A&M, well, they play Northwestern State on a Thursday to open the season, so that gives them a couple of extra days preparation for Clemson. But let me look at Clemson and see if they open on a Thursday, and if they have the same situation, if you will, then that'll be a wash. And Clemson does not. Okay. Clemson plays Furman on the 1st, which is a Saturday. So A&M has a couple extra days to prep for hosting Clemson. They'll need it. And when they play at Auburn, Auburn will be off a bye, and A&M will have played at Mississippi State the week before. A&M gets its open date ahead of playing in Stark Vegas at Mississippi State October 27th. I might be making my Stark Vegas debut on September 29th. My guy Billy Hall, shout out to Hall's Chop House in Charleston and Greenville, South Kakalaki. He has promised me the setup from the heavens if I make it.
Your debut, huh?
Yeah, maybe. And then maybe at Vandy 2 weeks later, but then when the hell am I going to get to the Swamp? Okay, LSU. First off, Phil Steele doesn't have a good prediction for LSU. He's got him 43rd in his rankings. Now, he has two separate sets of rankings, and I'm assuming that the top 25 that he gives, I think that's, or I'm fairly certain, but not all the way certain, that's right. Really his predictions of where teams are going to finish. He has his power rankings that are a little different, and that's understandably so. That's who he's saying on a neutral field tomorrow, I would make a favorite over whoever. The right. Other rankings are how he thinks with the schedule it's going to work out, and they're going to finish in the rankings. And I will go through both sets of rankings for SEC schools momentarily. So LSU, they open with Miami at Jerry World. When they play La Tech at home, La Tech has 2 weeks to prepare, and LSU is at Auburn the week before. LSU also, as I mentioned, Wow, they'll be playing their eighth game in 8 weeks when they host Mississippi State on October 20th, and Mississippi State will be coming off a bye. We'll have 2 weeks to prepare. LSU and Alabama both get 2 weeks to prepare for each other, so that's a wash. But Arkansas gets 2 weeks to prepare for LSU and catches LSU in a flat spot coming off hosting Bama when they go to Arkansas. So major advantage, situationally speaking, for the Hogs on November 10th at home against LSU. The Hogs have 2 weeks to prepare. LSU will be coming off a war with Alabama. Okay, Arkansas's schedule. They do not have to play a team all year that's coming off a bye. So that's good for the Hogs, who returned 9 starters on offense, 8 on defense. But they went 4-8 last year. Chad Morris has a big challenge in front of him. Ole Miss is predicted to finish last in the SEC West. I do not agree with Phil on that one. Ole Miss 6-6 last year, 8 starters back on offense, 7 on defense. They're going to be atrocious on defense. They're going to be dynamite on offense. In fact, Phil still ranks their wide receiver unit as the best in all of America. They do not face anybody all year that has 2 weeks to prepare for them, and they get 2 weeks to prepare for a home game against South Carolina, which I think will be a very key one for the Gamecocks and the Bulldogs of Georgia, that is, and perhaps the Gators. Okay, Georgia, it's a wash. Florida and Georgia both have a bye the week before. Georgia does not face anyone that has 2 weeks to prepare otherwise. Georgia, 13-2 last year, 8 starters back on offense, 5 on defense, as we've discussed over the last couple of weeks. At South Carolina, week 2, the big swing game for the SEC East race. Florida, same as Georgia. It's a wash. They both have 2 weeks to prepare for the trip to Jacks, and no other teams on the Florida schedule have 2 weeks to prepare for them. South Carolina gets 2 weeks to prepare for a home game with Tennessee. However, as I noted a minute ago, Ole Miss gets 2 weeks to prepare for a home game against the Gamecocks, and Missouri gets 2 weeks to prepare for the Gamecocks, but they do have to visit Williams-Brice, and South Carolina will be playing their 6th game in 6 weeks and will be coming off at Vandy and at Kentucky. Mizzou gets, as I just said, 2 weeks to prepare for the Gamecocks. Vandy gets 2 weeks to prepare for their trip to Mizzou, and Mizzou will be coming off a trip at Florida the week before, so advantage Vandy there in that sitch. Kentucky does not face a team that has 2 weeks to prepare all year, and they get 2 weeks to prepare for the Commodores of Derek Mason and Vandy October 20th. And Tennessee, they get 2 weeks to prepare for Auburn October 13th, and the Gamecocks, as noted, get 2 weeks to prepare for them October 27th. Vandy, Kentucky gets 2 weeks to prepare for the Doors, and Vandy gets 2 weeks to prepare for at Mizzou, which I had previously noted. So there's your scheduling factors for the SEC. Let's go to Phil Steele's all SEC squads. All right, his quarterbacks. First team, Jarrett Stidham, Auburn. Second team, Drew Lock, Missouri. Third team, Tua, Alabama. Fourth team, Nick Fitzgerald, Mississippi State. Obviously, Fitzgerald coming off that serious leg injury in the Egg Bowl.
Have you ever met Phil Steele?
I have not. Well, I don't think he was ever at any of our seminars. I don't think I have.
I got you. Just curious.
When he used to sell picks on VI, I used to talk to him on email occasionally, but no, I haven't.
He's like a football wizard.
I love him for his magazine.
No, I get you.
And I have no hate toward him at all, but I just love him for his magazine and all the information. But I don't like, and I think we've talked about this before, I don't take his predictions and, you know, help them formulate mine. I mean, like, I completely disagree. He's got Florida second in the SEC East. I mean, I think the SEC East is Georgia and South Carolina.
Right.
And I think his reasoning for Florida is Felipe Franks, because he's got him, excuse me, he does a position by position who's going to be draft eligible, which is what we were talking about off the air. You have to either have been out of high school 3 years, whether you're a true junior or a third year redshirt sophomore.
Right.
And so Franks redshirted, played last year, will play this year. So he is listed on his NFL draft for 2019 best available, and he has Felipe Franks at 32. Gotcha. I think Felipe Franks should be at 732.
Okay.
So
I got gotcha.
So that's why I disagree with his thinking. I think he thinks Franks is going to be good. I will never be so happy about being wrong about something, but I don't think I am. Felipe Franks will never be a good player in the SEC. I hope I'm wrong. I'll happily eat crow on that. I just do not see it happening. He does not have the decision-making, the instincts, the awareness. I've always lauded his size, his arm, his movement. I mean, he moves great for a big guy. Had that, like, a 77-yard run
right.
against A&M last year, and in typical McElwain fashion, we got 0 points out of that.
Right, yeah, messed it up.
Just another empty trip to the red zone. Yeah. All right, so Benny Snell and Damian Harris are his first-team running backs in the SEC. A.J. Brown, Emmanuel Hall from Missouri, and, of course, my man Deebo Samuel are his three wide receivers. Second-team All-SEC with Phil Steele. Aris Williams, running back from Mississippi State. DeAndre Swift, who obviously moves into a much more prominent role for the Bulldogs with Sony Michel and Nick Chubb gone. And by the way, I think I mentioned it last week. I know I mentioned it on my interview with Kwok and Kelly in Clemson. Sony Michel, 30-1 odds to be NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. Puts you down a little something on that. He might be a Pro Bowler as a rookie. And then Jamon Osborn for A&M at wide receiver, along with Ryan Davis of Auburn and DK Metcalf of Ole Miss. Metcalf had that game-winning catch to beat Kentucky last year. Crockett from Missouri is a third-team running back. Jordan Scarlett from the Gators out all of last year. And Jonathan Johnson at wide receiver from Missouri. Mecole Hardman, wide receiver, Georgia. Jonathan Giles, wide receiver, LSU. Who's going to be throwing Giles the ball? I don't know about that one, Phil. I would have had some Kyrie Cleveland right there. Or actually, I would have had Brian Mama Can't Spell Edwards. He should be up on the second team, actually, before Osborn from A&M. Before Ryan Davis of Auburn, too. Brian Mama Can't Spell Edwards should be a second teamer. But he's a fourth teamer, along with DeVoy Whaley, running back from Arkansas, and Cam Martin. He back. He kind of no-showed last year. Cam Martin, fourth-team running back, and Whaley. And then Darius Slayton, Auburn wide receiver, and Lipscomb, the speedster from Vandy. So there's your skill players on offense for Phil Steele. I want to mention my guy, Caden Smith, getting some love from a lot of the magazines. Phil Steele, no exception. Preseason, second team, All-American, and the third best draft eligible tight end behind only Noah Fant of Iowa, who Phil Steele has a mock draft of a first round, has Noah Fant going number 20 overall, does not have another tight end going in the first round. And then the second best available tight end is the big guy from Mizzou. But then Caden's the third best available tight end. As I've said many times, Caden is going to have a monster year. So is Costella. So is Arcega Whiteside. They are not going to be as salty on defense as they have been, but their offense with Bryce Love, they're going to be really, really good. And can't wait to watch some Stanford football this year. So Phil Steele's toughest schedules for 2018. Number one is UCLA. I don't think they're going to be any good anyway. And the toughest schedule, bad news. Purdue, Jeff Brohm, second year. Oh, boy, Harbo, guess who's got the third toughest schedule in America?
I think I know.
Michigan. Oregon State, 4.
I haven't looked at it yet.
Oh, FSU, 5. Oh, I like that. Let's go to FSU's schedule. Let's go to FSU's schedule. God, I want to see so many L's.
I'm sure you'll get a few.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, the semis, 7-6 last year. 8 starters back on offense, 4 on defense. Willie Taggart, the new head coach. FSU was 4-7-2 against the spread last year. They won at Florida because Franks handed them 3 touchdowns, 2 pick sixes, a scoop and score. I want to say he gave them another turnover that gave them the ball in the red zone. Like, they beat us 38-22, but I think, like, going to the fourth quarter, they had like 80 yards of offense and 30-something points. That's how bad Felipe Franks is. Oh, my God. They got so lucky to come back and beat Wake Forest. They beat Duke by 7. Oh, they were so lucky to beat Syracuse by 3. Syracuse missed a tying field goal on the last play of regulation. They beat Delaware State. They beat the Gators, so we gave it to them. They beat ULM. Oh, and they beat Southern Miss in the bowl game. Shout out to Odell Higgins, 1-0 career. The Noles lose their top 4 tacklers. They're going to suck. They're going to suck. They open Virginia Tech. Did we ever get any clarification on James Jackson last week? I haven't looked it up in the last few days. Last time I looked, there was no...
I don't believe
official
so.
Word. And there's so many damn James Jacksons that you do a Twitter search and there's just all these Jameses.
You're getting a lot of them. A lot of Jacksons, a lot of James.
James Jackson, Virginia Tech. Whatever. I don't have time for this. Vatech is the opener for FSU at home. At Syracuse, a tricky week 3 game. Eric Dungy, if he is healthy, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, plain and simple. They go at Louisville and at Miami in back-to-back weeks. FSU gets 2 weeks to prepare for Wake Forest, but Wake also gets 2 weeks to prepare. At Notre Dame, at NC State, Clemson and Holmes and L. Finley is back for the Wolfpack. I know they lost their D-line. At Notre Dame's a likely L. If the Gators are getting quarterback play, that might be an L. A lot of L's for the Noles. Lots of them. Love it. Love that. All right, so here's Phil Steele's top 25, like, prediction-wise, not power ranking-wise.
Okay.
Alabama's the uno. Clemson, 2. All right, I agree on 1 and 2. Ohio State, 3. I haven't really gotten to my Big Ten studies, so I will reserve judgment. I'm a big fan of Washington. They're 4th. Georgia's 5th. I think it might be a tad too high. Wisconsin's 6th. I'm big-time bullish on the Badgers. The Canes are 7th. Like their talent. Not so much their coach. A little high for me. Notre Dame, 8. Seems a little high for me. Oklahoma, 9. I got to see a little Kyler Murray. But they got some good running backs for sure. Texas, 10. I think that's way too high. Michigan, 11. I think that's about right. If Shea Patterson has a great year, it might not be high enough. Penn State, 12. I think Penn State should be up a notch or two. Michigan State brings a lot back. They're 13. Boise State, 14. Stanford, 15. I bet he has Stanford higher in his power rankings. And we'll get to those in a minute. USC 16, Florida 17, FSU 18, Auburn 19. I think Auburn should be higher. TCU 20, Mississippi State 21, Utah, give me 2, 22. Oh, wow. Utah's 22. You know, Point Break? Utah, give me 2. You know that? You know what I'm talking about?
Point Break, yeah.
He's going to get the sandwiches before the bank robbery.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Utah, make sure you get me 2. So anytime I say Utah, I go, give me 2. And then they're number 22.
Point Break was a good
one. That wasn't planned. BC, the Adazios, 23. Oregon, 24. Am I reading this right? Arkansas State, 25. What, Phil? What? The Red Wolves? Are you kidding me? Dear goodness. I got to go take a look at their page. Those transfers didn't work out last year. The Alabama five-star did nothing for them. Let's see what Arkansas... They got App State will kick their ass. Let's see here. Well, he's got App State predicted to win the... I'm sorry. Sun Belt's in divisions now. Okay, my fault. Okay, Arkansas State. 7-5 last year. 7 starters back on offense. 5 on defense. They lost to Middle Tennessee in the bowl game. Why is he so bullish on them? All right, let me look. I mean, I know Justice Hansen, hell of a quarterback. You know, 37-16 TDINT last year, 665 rushing yards before the minuses on sacks for 7 touchdowns. Leading rusher Warren Hand is back. Leading receiver Justin McKinnis is back. 3 of the top 4 tacklers are back. But, I mean, I need to be seeing some, like, transfers. Okay, here's one. Kirk Merritt was at Oregon and A&M earlier in his career. Okay, and here's a wide receiver from Oklahoma initially. See, okay, that's kind of what I'm looking for to up the talent level. But that's it. That's it. There are no more transfers. Unless, oh, wait, Kendrick Edwards, a wide receiver from Arkansas. Okay, so 3 wide receivers that were initially signed by Power 5 schools for Hansen. But then I look at their schedule, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4 teams get 2 weeks to prepare for them. They do get App State at home, but App State also has a week to extra time to prepare as well. No, Phil, don't like that. Arkansas State, 25.
Bad call.
I would say that's 20 spots too high, at least. But I love your magazine, buddy. Iowa, 26. A&M, 27. UCF, 28. Memphis, 29. 30, West Virginia. Nope, they're better than that. FAU, 31. I think they're better than that. Oh, my God. South Carolina, 34. Get out of here. South Carolina's a top 20 team. Okay, I'm tired. I got to go to your power rankings, buddy. Because your prediction rankings are not what I'm looking for. Okay, let's see if they're how different they are. Bama 1, Clemson 2, Ohio State 3, Georgia 4, Wisconsin 5, Michigan 6. Up,
wow.
Up from 11.
Wow, Phil.
Washington 7, Notre Dame 8, Oklahoma 9, Stanford 10. I thought they'd be higher. 15 up to 10. Michigan State 11, Penn State 12, Auburn 13, USC 14, Texas 15, Mississippi State 16. I think he had them 21. Miami 17. Okay, and didn't he have them like top 10, like 8th? So, yeah, that looks like more, yeah. That's a reflection of the schedule because power ranking-wise, he has the Canes 17, FSU 18, BC 19th. Oh, that's too high. A&M 20th, TCU 21, Utah 22, Florida 23. Oh, he does have South Carolina 24. Okay. I get why is he? I think their schedule. I think South Carolina's schedule works great. Why does he? I don't understand the difference in their ranking compared to their power ranking. What is that? 24 compared to what was he? 34 on the? Yeah, that's 10 spots. I mean, they start with 3 at home. Their road games are all winnable. At Ole Miss. At Florida, at Vandy, at Kentucky. Oh, wait, no, they lose at Clemson, but anyway. All right, LSU 25, and we didn't even get to them. They were down to 43 in his regular rankings. Okay, so that's good for that. Let's see, what else do I want to hit on?
Who's the dark horse this year?
He's got Florida as the dark horse. That's his roulette chip.
But that's not you.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've had this magazine for. I need to have relations with this magazine for a little while before I'm setting my. You know, the only picks I have in stone are South Carolina over.
We got a couple months.
Yeah, and I did like Stanford over at 8 when it came out at, but now it's 9.5 with like big plus value on the over. I don't know that I want to go there for them to be 10-2. Here are his surprise teams. 1 Notre Dame, 2 Texas, 3 Michigan State, 4 Michigan, 5 Stanford, 6 USC, 7 FSU, 8 Mississippi State, 9 Boston College, 10 TCU, 11 Utah, 12 South Carolina, and then the roulette chip, also known as long shot, Florida Gators. So, the top non-Power 5 teams, he has Boise State 1, UCF 2, FAU 3, Memphis 4. Okay, I like those four teams a lot. I like those four teams a lot. Ohio 5, Marshall 6, Navy 7, Fresno State 8, San Diego State 9, Houston 10. I like those top four teams a lot, a lot. And USF didn't even make it, huh? Rebuild mode for Charlie. So I ordered my Feel Steel mag. So I don't know if it's on the magazine racks at Publix or wherever you do your grocery shopping, but if not, it should be there soon. And
Brian's got a lifetime subscription.
Right? And I wanted to go through SEC players that made his All-American teams and the skill players. So, quarterbacks, first-team All-American, Will Greer, could be a Gator. Thanks, Swamp Donk. Thanks, McElwiener. Appreciate you. 4 hours late for a meeting with Will Greer so you could be in Wakulla recruiting Felipe Franks. That's your wide receiver coach I'm talking about. You know that, right?
I know.
All right. His second team All-American QB is Mackenzie Milton from UCF. Jarrett Stidham is his third team, and Jake Browning from Washington is his fourth team. All right, running backs, Bryce Love and Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin. First team, Miles Gaskin, Washington. Damian Harris, Alabama. Second team, A.J. Dillon, Rodney Anderson. Third team, Dillon for BC. Anderson, obviously, OU. And then J.K. Dobbins, Ohio State, and Devin Singletary, FAU. And Oklahoma's defense better be ready for Devin Singletary. All right, wide receivers, first team, two SEC guys, Debo Samuel and A.J. Brown, and then N'Keal Harry from Arizona State. I'm really rooting for Herm Edwards. I know that a lot of the media is blasting him. I love Herm Edwards. I hope it goes well for him. The wide receivers, second team, David Sills, West Virginia, Anthony Johnson, Buffalo, and Felton Davis, Michigan State. Third team All-American wide receivers from the Phil Steele Mag, Marquise Brown, Oklahoma, Tyler Vaughns, USC, Stanley Morgan Jr., Nebraska. Is that Stanley Morgan of New England Patriots fame, son? I don't know, man. Stanley Morgan from New England. I mean, he's grandson, actually. Stanley Morgan, I mean, like, we're going back to the Dan Pastorini days, aren't we? When they had the worst helmets in the world. The wide receivers on fourth team. Another FAU guy, Jovan Durant, or Durante. Penny Hart, a Sunbelt guy, Georgia State. And the aforementioned J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Stanford. All right, Gators, All-Americans, David Reese, fourth team linebacker. And that's a wrap on the Gator All-Americans, that is. Other SEC All-Americans, Ross Pierschbacher, Alabama center, first team. Jonah Williams, Alabama offensive tackle, first team. Greg Little, Ole Miss offensive tackle, second team. Halte Froholt, Arkansas offensive guard, second team. I mentioned Damian Harris. All right, third team. Offense from the SEC, the big tight end from Missouri. Pronunciation's impossible. Not even going to try. That's it for third team offense. Fourth team offense, Bagels for the SEC. First team All-American defense, Phil Steele Mag from the SEC. Devin White, linebacker, LSU. Greedy Williams, what a great name for a cornerback, LSU. DeAndre Baker, cornerback, Puppies. Second team defense, Jeffrey Simmons, Miss State, defensive tackle. Raekwon Davis, defensive end, Alabama. Mike Edwards, safety, Kentucky. Third team defense, Terry Beckner, defensive tackle, Mizzou. That's it for third team. Fourth team defense, Montez Sweat, Mississippi State, defensive end. Josh Allen, Kentucky, defensive end. As I mentioned, David Reese, Florida linebacker. That's it. Special teams. Missouri punt returner, Rashad Floyd, Missouri. Kick returner, second team, Debo Samuel. Punter, Corey Fatone, Missouri. Third team, the dork-looking kicker who the biggest kick in Georgia football history after Lincoln Riley with that terrible squib kick just before halftime. The game turner in one of my five favorite games I've ever watched. Georgia, Oklahoma, instant classic, 56-49 overtime win for the Dogs. That game turned when Rodrigo Blankenship hit that 55-yard field goal to end the first half, and he's a third-team All-American. Fourth team, Blake Ferguson, long snapper, LSU. That's it. All right, like I told Harbaugh, I need to have some relations with my Phil Steele Mag before I get to too many strong predictions. So we're going to wrap up Games Galore 39 right here and now. Thanks to Colin for joining us. Really enjoyed that interview. And we'll get him back on sometime soon. Thanks to Harbo. Thanks to you for listening. And over and out. Talk to you next week. Happy birthday.